vanity. They allure, they draw to them.
To the lusts of the flesh, through much wantonness. Those
clean escaped from them who live in error. While they promised them liberty, they themselves are servants of corruption. For of whom a man is overcome, of the same is he brought in bondage. That's kind of an interesting phrase there. Of whom a man is overcome, of the same he is brought in bondage. Which form of bondage are you in? Because you say you are a believer in Jesus Christ. Were you overcome of the same, of the Lord Jesus Christ? Are you not in bondage to him? If you were not overcome of him, are you not in bondage to the things of this world? And are you not bound in that manner and form? Now, I don't suppose this is something that the way we would normally phrase it when we say, I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, if any man be in Christ, he is a new creature. All things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new. But isn't that the same thought that's involved there? So when we look at this verse 18, I want to go back up to it here. For when they speak great swelling words, I suppose that there are occasions when anybody which is around us might speak out and be quite eloquent on some occasions or other, whatever it might be the subject, that they would do this. The question is, what is the content of the words? And here, in this case, these folks who are false prophets, they speak great swelling words of vanity. Now, I don't imagine that anybody complains when pastor gets up on Sunday morning and speaks great swelling words of truth. The issue is, what's in the content? And that's what we really want to be aware of here. And vanity, remember we talked about that a while back, has to do with that which is empty, which doesn't have... Brother Myers was bragging about having a x-ray between his ears, and they claimed that they didn't find anything. That's the whole meaning of that term, vanity, right there. There's nothing there. It's empty. Now, he said that. I didn't say it. I don't think I believe him. I think there is something between his ears, and quite worthy. For when they speak great swelling words of vanity, they allure through the lusts of the flesh. Now, this is the way of the world. You listen to all of these people who are talking to us on the TV. They try to draw us to them, don't they? Or to their principles or to their subject or whatever it is that they want. Our president does that. Our senators do that. Our representatives do that. Our neighbors do that. The guy that is standing talking to his neighbor in the backyard or in the alley or on the street somewhere or at the store, they try to lure people, and through the lusts of the flesh is the normal way. That's normal. That's what we expect, because that is the only kind of life that they can know. Born into this world, people who are born into this world, the only kind of life that they can know is that which is according to the flesh. So when we have these great and swelling conversations that go on, the question is, what is it that they're speaking about? And what is the source of that which they're speaking? Where does all this come from? The experiences that they have in this life. And it has to do with that which the flesh experiences. Quite frankly, that's the scientific method. Now, that ought to confuse you for a minute. The scientific method says, I see something going on. I'm going to conjecture that this is possibly the result that's going to take place. Now, I go in and inspect what's going on. I use my eyes to see, and I use my ears to hear, and I use my hands to touch, and I use all kinds of instruments to do this or to do that. And with all of this, I gather together all of this evidence, and I decide whether or not I've proved my point. And if I think I've proved my point, I make a declaration that this is some form of truth. Now, one of the things that doesn't happen normally is that when they're using this scientific method, one of the characteristics of the examination is that they always use fleshly experience, but never, well, yes, it is, they do, many do. They don't compare against the standard and the evidence that is given to them through the scriptures and through the evidence that God provides. If it's fleshly, they don't have an interest in God's perspective. That's the area of examination that they leave out in the scientific method. That's almost by definition in the schools, in the colleges, in the universities. I guess that's the same thing. In the industry, one of the things that they leave out in their examination is that I don't want this to be contaminated by the interest of which God has in this and how he sets the standard and comparing it to that standard to find out if it meets that standard. Now, when they measure something by temperature, they measure it with a thermometer. There's a standard. When they have to do with color, they have color wheels and they decide which is the exact area that they want to identify. They even give you wavelength numbers and things like this so they can examine colors and they have something to compare to. But one of the things that they try to leave off is, what is God's opinion on this? And by leaving that off, then what they have to do is use great and swelling words that they allure through the lusts of the flesh. Does it feel good to me? Now, some of the things that we do don't necessarily feel good to me, even though we know it's right. For example, if I find a wallet in the street and it has $100 in it, $200 in it, I can say, I can have a nice night out to dinner and no one's going to know the difference, but everybody would say, well, I don't know whose it is. You might as well keep it. They go by the standards and that are in of the flesh, but this kind of situation allures, people's opinions allure, and we go along this route, say, okay, I guess I'll pocket that $200 and I'll go up on top of the hilltop where the fancy restaurant is. It has cloth napkins and that I was told about by the Barnhart, and I'll go and enjoy myself, take some friends with me, and have a nice dinner, and I'm quite satisfied and pleased with the way things go. Now, the standard regarding keeping that money is set by law too, isn't it? Isn't there a law that says how long you can keep money? And my understanding is that maybe you have to turn it into an impartial authority. And if that impartial authority goes by the standards of God, then after so many days, weeks, months, I don't know how long it is, then you can go back and say, did anybody come and claim this? And if they didn't, then they might return it to you as being the owner of it at that point. But how many people do that? According to that standard that's there, they use the lust of the flesh to make their own rules and their own standard, and so then they can come to a result that they want. Now, this next phrase takes up that point that I just suggested concerning the outside authority, for you see, they allure through the lust of the flesh through much wantonness. Now, I want to settle down on that word for a little bit. Before I get to it, I want to finish the phrase. It says, those that were clean escape from them who are in error. Those who are clean escape from them who are in error. Now, the idea of wantonness, let's settle in on that for a while and look at it. Wantonness comes from the word, I would think, want. W-A-N-T. Wouldn't that be the fundamental basis of that longer word? Wantonness. If you want something, you're going to have a passion for it. My wife made some cookies yesterday. And I decided I had an appetite for it, had a passion for it. And so I asked her if she minded if I cut off a piece for myself. And she says, well, it's kind of hot. And she says, go ahead, take a knife out of the drawer and cut yourself a piece off. Well, I got to the edge of this big square pan, and I got to the top edge and went over just about that far, put the knife in, and I sliced it all the way across the pan. I had one piece. Right? Now, the issue that's involved here is wantonness has to do with passions or appetites that are not restraining. She didn't tell me how big a piece I could have. And I knew what she would cut. But I was wanton in this sense, in that I was not particularly restraining my desires for this. And so I had myself a little plate, and I filled it all up with little pieces off this one piece that I took and went upstairs and studied. Now, here's the whole issue that's involved here is that we have a world. Wantonness also carries the idea the idea of incontinence, there is no restraint. People have these appetites. They have these passions involved in a sexual appetite. They indulge in lust, which is without restraint and in violation of law, which is unchaste and lewd. Now, that's one aspect of it here, that we talk about the idea of continent, incontinent or continent has to, there's also some aspects to it that moderation and temperance is involved when one is continent. There's not the excess. It doesn't carry itself away and get out of hand. Now, are you able to forbear? Are you able to do things in moderation? Of course, obviously, I did that with the cookies last night. I didn't take the whole pan with me. I just took one piece, right? Everybody decides things differently. So, refraining. Now, another concept that's involved in wantonness is this idea of licentiousness. Licentiousness. You've heard of that term in the scriptures more than once, I'm sure. And licentiousness comes from the word license. It has to do with licentiousness has to do with excessive indulgence of liberty. I'm going to talk about liberty as later as we go along here further. But licentiousness is not only indulgence of liberty. Oh, wait a minute here. I'm getting in trouble because liberty is what everybody wants. Isn't that the big cry? We don't want to lose our liberty. That's the big discussion that's out here. So if we have excessive indulgence of liberty, we have licentiousness. And there's a group of people when you have demonstrations, in some of these bigger cities, you have people who say that we can do anything we want. We're going to have a demonstration, and oftentimes with these people that get involved in these demonstrations, they say, I'm free to stand up and declare what I want. In the process of it all, why they get a lot of people together, they start throwing rocks. In fact, when there was a big riot, supposedly, that was taking place in Pittsburgh a couple of years ago or so, around the colleges, they were trying to prevent licentiousness from taking place. And they were telling students, go to your dorms, stay in your dorms, go to your dorms. But there was a fellow who was licentious in that he came into the area where there were a lot of people, and he had a hammer in his hand, or he had a stone or something like this. And as he went down the streets, he was breaking windows. I would say that's a form of licentiousness. When people were just milling around, they were pretty much behaving themselves, having their freedom of assembly and all of this kind of thing. The fellow who was breaking windows and causing trouble would be one who would be described as licentious. And what he was doing, it was excessive indulgence of liberty. Well, I should have the right to do anything I want. If I'm walking down the street and have a club or a hammer in my hand, if that window seems to be offensive to me, thunk, get it out of the way. Right? So here we have a contempt for the just restraints of law and morality and decorum. Would you say that if someone came into your house and they decided that they were going to break some windows or rip, stomp on your plants? You've just worked all last week or two. Plants start coming up. Your tulips are blooming nice, and they say, "Oh, isn't that a pretty garden full of tulips? I wonder. I'm going to go in there and stomp, 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 stomp. Pretty, everything's all flat." That would be considered lack of decorum, I would think. And not only that, I think you could even go so far to say that it was unlawful. They were doing damage in things that were there. And there are just restraints of law and morality and decorum. Morality is one of the things where people are wanting to claim freedom. Liberty. I want to be free. I want to have liberty to do this or to do that. And so they don't go buy marriage licenses anymore, and they don't worry about divorces anymore. They just go and show their liberty, exercise licentiousness. And so authors, even when they write books, don't we have the freedom of speech and freedom of the press and these kinds of things? Is it not true that there are some who are licentious in their exercise of this kind of liberty? And we need to be a people who can discern the difference between that which is licentious and that which is liberty, going beyond. So, license is permission that is given. You're allowed to forbear or do something. You guys know what licenses are all about. You have one in your pocket or your purse. It's called a driver's license. There's other kinds of licenses that we get to build buildings and things like this. So this is all part of it. When we go past that which is the law in relationship to these things, why then we are licentious. Excess of liberty. Exorbitant freedom. Freedom abused. It's used in contempt of law or decorum. Now, when we take the area of liberty, liberty is freedom from restraint. And this would be, in a general sense, and applicable to a body of people. The United States decided they wanted to have freedom. They wanted to have liberty from England. And so they decided that they wanted to be free from a particular level of restraint. And so then they had the Boston Tea Party and various events that took place. George Washington ran around the country, Pennsylvania and other places, New York and such, I gather, for the purpose working it out so that it would be free from restraint. You don't want to be confined. All you have to do is get down in a traffic jam and you're confined. And you would say, liberty, oh, to have liberty. I want to go 50 miles an hour all the way down through Pittsburgh, all the way down 28, all the way up through the tunnel and over to the airport. That's what I'd really like to do. Of course, if you actually do that, you're licentious because you're exceeding certain levels in certain locations that would be beyond what would be permissible. Liberty from restraint, and has to do with the body. You don't like people restraining you. Somebody walks up to you and hangs onto your hand and says, come with me, or just hangs on, doesn't let you loose. You say, I want my liberty. Let go. It has to do with the idea of the mind. People are always playing with your mind, kind of trying to control it this way and control it that way, and you'll find that happening in the media particularly. You don't want these things controlled. Now, we have different kinds of liberty, and I think we need to understand this. We need to talk about this a little bit. We have natural liberty. Natural liberty consists in the power of acting as one sees fit. Sounds okay so far, doesn't it? That's what everybody wants, natural liberty. The power to act as one sees fit without any restraint or control. Now, the next word is what everybody doesn't like, except. You see, it's the except that makes the difference. Except from the laws of nature. That which is natural. Now, we have problems when we're discussing these kinds of things because when we're talking about nature, if you exclude God from the concept of nature, then anything goes. But if God is the one who in his creation set up things to operate according to a natural course, that means something else altogether. And that's really what nature has to mean. And so we have to keep this in mind. The laws of nature, that which is set up by God in the organizing of the universe, the organizing of the earth, the organizing of the ways of man, this is nature, the laws of nature. Now, we want to be exempt from the control of others. But one of the things that happens, and we also find this is the second organizing arrangement which we have in the world, one is the family. God's established, the individual established a family. The family was the organizing social structure by which in which the world first operated and should have operated well in. But what happens is that it didn't do well, and people, I guess, were licentious, they went past the permission that was involved there. They were a people who chose to go their own way and ignore the control of the family. And so everybody did that which was right in their own eyes, and God sent Noah to build an ark because they did everything that was in their eyes was evil, in their ways was evil. And God brought an end to that. And when we came through the flood and came out the other side, then God established another institution, which we would call government. It was an institution of social life. And in this institution of social life, one of the things that comes out of this is what we call law, or maybe I should say positive law. See, we have natural law, and then we have, in relationships we have to this, we have positive law. Natural law is God's order. We don't show a lot of interest in following God's order, potentially, in our as a natural man, because we are corrupt in our thoughts and our ways. But there's positive law, and God established positive law. The first order of positive law was this. Now, God's law was, you shall love your neighbors yourself, right? That's the one that we still live under even today. You shall love your neighbor. But if you choose not to love your neighbor, then you kill him. Right. We have Cain and Abel. Cain and Abel. Cain didn't love his brother Abel, and he killed him. Now, after the flood, God established positive law. And the primary principle of that positive law was this. You take a man's life, then it's the operation of the organization of people to remove that person also. To remove that person who did the killing. Positive law. Now, we have lots of other positive laws anymore that seem to override what we would call our liberty, natural liberty. Other positive law is that on April 15th, you have to fill out a form and send it in through the post office or take it into somebody. Taxes, oh, we love that positive law. There's other kinds of positive law that has to do with your driver's license. There's several involved there, really, because you first of all have to take a test to know all kinds of positive law declarations that are put out there and tells you when you can go and when to stop and when to pass and when not to pass and all kinds of things, positive law that's involved there. All kinds of positive law that's in there. Your community tells you how close to the street you can build your house or how far back or what the property lines, how close to the property lines you can build. They tell you when you can build a shed and when you can't, and all kinds of positive laws that are out there. There are laws that you, as a group of people, organized in your townships or organized in your boroughs or organized in your counties, you hire somebody through voting to go into a meeting and to make positive laws to control your life and mine. And those positive laws have to do with that which is controlling or even interfering with natural liberty. Natural liberty is a very important thing, but positive laws are involved there. And these institutions of social life, these things, this liberty which we have is abridged. It's controlled by the establishment of government. Now, we have natural law, which consists of the power of acting as one sees fit without restraint, except for the laws of nature. That's the way the whole world operated in the beginning, and that's actually the way Israel generally was to operate as a nation. God ruled them. They didn't need a king. They paid attention to the natural liberties that were theirs, given to them. But when we talk about civil liberty is the liberty of man in a state or society. It's necessary for the purpose of safety and for the interest of society, a state and nation. It is a restraint of natural liberty. Civil liberty is. It's not necessary, expedient for the public, that which is not necessary or expedient for the public. If we resist natural liberty, then we find that tyranny takes place and oppression takes place, so we need civil actions to take place to prevent these things. That's why Cain and Abel, what did God do to Cain? You know, he basically let him continue on in life. He did tell him he had to go move, go to another location. But other than that, there was very little restraint to his to his liberty. But when we're talking about civil liberty, we're talking about when you ignore natural liberty, then this other form takes place, and it happens through our government. And so what happens is that then man is restrained from injuring and controlling another. Now, if everybody loved one another, you wouldn't be interested in restraining or controlling them. But if you don't love your brother, you will be interested in restraining and controlling those others who are there. So that's why when we live in our neighborhoods, if I live in my neighborhood and every time I open up a can of soup, open up the window and throw the can out and it lands in the neighbor's property, there is injury, at least to his own liberty, in that he has to come out and pick it up instead of you picking it up and putting it in the trash. There are things that are much worse than that, and it may be that the neighbor would come over to your house and say, well, since I've picked up your garbage for a year, I'm going to come and I'm going to take 4 or 5 of your chickens, and I'm going to make soup out of them and put them in the freezer for the next year. Now see, there's injury and there's damage that takes place there. So we find that the civil liberty is that which is there that is to put restraints of law that are essential to provide for the things that when people ignore natural liberty. We don't have natural liberty in our country. We have civil liberty for the most part in our country. We are a country set up of laws. Originally, there was a lot of natural liberty that was possible to be there. But when people aren't interested in God and in natural liberty, then civil liberty becomes more intrusive and would even become oppressive, and it would form in the realms of tyranny. So if you think tyranny is taking place today, more so than it was when you were 20 years old or 15 years old, it may well be that the tyranny is there because natural liberty is not something that the individual is being concerned about, in that they take personal responsibility for their own things, but then try to put off onto someone else that which should be their own responsibility. So this gives us a relationship that's involved here. I think that this is probably enough of a discussion concerning this, but the reason we came into all of this is that there are those who are prophets, for when they speak great swelling words of vanity, see, they're not interested in God's interests. So it's emptiness. Swelling words of vanity, they allure through the lusts of the flesh that which satisfies me or my friends, but not necessarily you. They allure through the lusts of the flesh through much wantonness. They aren't interested in liberty. They aren't interested in things that are involved there. They want to be licentious. They want to go beyond that which is license or that which is permitted by God. They even want to go beyond that which is license, which is permitted by civil law. They want to push this all the way to the extremes. And so they allure through the lust of the flesh, through much wantonness, those that were clean escaped from them who live in error. Now, here's where some of this works, is that we have a congregation, we have a church. Theoretically, we are interested in being clean. We form our own society, we form our own community. We operate as a people who work together. We're more interested as individuals in natural law, that which is naturally given to us by God, and to form a personal responsibility and accountability and a doing of these things among ourselves. We are a people who do not need
doesn't mean we ignore, but we don't need civil law. We don't need positive law. We don't need the outside coming in and constantly telling us this and that and this and that. We have few rules in this congregation. If you think about this, you go look at our Constitution. How small is it? How small is it in comparison to the latest medical bill that went through Congress here not too long ago? How many pages are we compared to that, was it 1,500 pages that they have in that bill? That's only one law that they made for this year out of many. Congress doesn't even make a law that's as small as our Constitution, our positive law that we have here for ourselves. Their positive law is excessively big, massive, all the time. Who can possibly read it and know what's all there? You want to know where liberty is? You gather among a people such as this who have a very small document, and we depend extensively upon natural law. We are interested in the will of God, and we take responsibility for that. And so within the realms of this building, or within the realms of our congregation, if we didn't have a building, when we gather together, we can go and be really enjoy an immense amount of liberty. And so licentiousness should not operate within a church, but we are pure and we have the joys of the things that are available to us. And so this should be an illustration. This should be an example both to our townships and to our boroughs and to our counties. There are a people who can live without excessive positive law because there are people who care about the will of God, the love of God. They're concerned about the purity that's there in their own lives. And they follow two laws, really two laws. Two laws is a whole lot different than hundreds and thousands. Two laws is what controls us. We love God. We love our brothers and sisters. We live by these two laws. Liberty is extensively working through us as individuals. If we want to live as the world does, according to the natural man, then we go and grab all of this which is there and enjoy all of their laws and all of their wantonness. We enjoy all of the things that are the problems that in this country. Tyranny is that which is extending and building. Tyranny is not what takes place here. We have a place where there's true liberty and true freedom. Dear Heavenly Father, may we be a people who enjoy that which you have made for us by living as a people who are pure, wanting pureness above all, wanting to know that is which is pure because we compare against you. Father, may we be a people who purpose to enjoy this to all extents to the rest of the days of our life. And so I thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.